Welcome back to the Outdoor Adventures Podcast. Today in the studio, we've got special guest Dylan Williams. Thanks for being here, buddy. Yeah, we missed you.
I miss you guys too.
He's been gone for a little bit. And John Gaderos, always good to have you on the program.
Yeah, good to be back.
Been filling Dylan's seat for the last couple of weeks. And he looks pretty comfortable in it. I don't know what you think, Dylan, but...
Well, I had to give it to him today because it just didn't feel right anymore. I didn't feel like I earned it.
Yeah, you're just giving it up, the co-host position. Yeah. And we got another guest in the studio. We have Damon Struble from Nomads Fishing Adventures. Hey, Damon.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
Fantastic.
We're excited to have you here because we end up talking about hunting a lot instead of fishing. And I did, while I was Facebook stalking you before you got here, I did notice you got a pretty nice blacktail with your Willamette tag a couple of years ago.
Actually, the place I hunt now, I've got several nice bucks off of.
Oh, really?
I can show you pictures if you want to see them.
Yeah, we're going to have to see those pictures, but we don't want to dive into hunting because we're going to talk about fishing today. So, but we always tend to gravitate back towards it. I'm actually going bass fishing tonight, so proud of myself. And then John and I are going to Cast for Kids tomorrow morning and going to go fish with some kids.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yep, 7:30 in the morning. He's ready.
Yeah, so, the Cast for Kids thing, it's a really great thing. I do the one over in Newport every year, and it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah,
really rewarding to get a kid's
out. This is my second time doing it, John's first time, but it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get more out of it than the kids do, I think.
You know? You really do, and real appreciative parents and stuff. So, yeah,
it's awesome. Neat. So, Damon, tell us about your business a little bit. So, first of all, before we got started, I didn't put this together, but... Nomads Fishing Adventures is your name spelled backwards, and you were telling us that. So
yeah. So, and it actually, it's kind of apropos as to the way I conduct my business, because I may be bottom fishing for one day and salmon fishing the next, and then kokanee or trout fishing, and so I'm actually fairly nomadic in the way I run my guide business. I don't just go and anchor my boat in one spot and spend 2-3 months there.
Yeah. So you're going wherever the clients want to go after.
Yeah. Yeah, keep it fresh all the time.
How often are you fishing every week?
Well, you know, it is a retirement job for me. And so, and then got to make sure my wife doesn't hear this. So after...
Don't worry, the wives don't listen.
So. After she retired, I couldn't really guide as much because I had to spend time with her and stuff. And I get that. So I guess I should say I should fish as much as I want to. And... but if I was to break it down over the year, it's probably only 3 days a week, maybe.
That's still decent. But, you know,
August, September, that's fall salmon season, and I'm booked like every single day. And that's when my wife goes and travels around and sees the kids and stuff like that because I'm just not home.
Are you doing the buoy 10 fishery?
I hate buoy 10.
Okay.
I don't do that anymore. It's just too chaotic. Mm-hmm. And the personalities I don't like. I like to have fun and have everybody be relaxed. And when you have to worry about people running you over.
Yeah.
You know, or just having that washboard.
Yeah.
You know, I've never all fished all the wakes. Well, just when people ask me why, I just say, well, just imagine that you're in a line of 200 boats and you're all trolling in one direction and stuff, and some guy in his 30-foot offshore treats it like a slalom course. Mm. He's just weaving in amongst everybody, not being like the normal people who take and go way off to the side, outside the pack, and run up. You know, it's just, I just don't need to deal with that.
Yeah.
I dealt with too many crazy people for too long that
sure.
I don't need to be around that anymore.
So I heard the Sillettes was a little bit combat fishy this year. It was a little chaotic with boats and guys trying to do bobbers and guys trying to troll and guys, you know.
So, and I try and stay off the Sillettes for that reason. Just because there's, you have the bobber fishermen, the trollers, and then the anchor fishermen. And there's nothing worse than, because I pretty much, when I'm down in Tidewater, just troll. I don't like bobber fishing down in Tidewater because you're just waiting, you know, for a fish to swim by. Where if I'm moving and trolling, I'm putting it in front of fish. Mm-hmm. And I just think I'm more productive that way. But if you hook up with a fish and then it runs over into somebody's anchor line, super, super frustrating because they can't pull them up in time to get out of your way.
Yeah.
And so it's, so once again, to alleviate that frustration, I just don't go there unless I absolutely have to.
Well, and you've got all different skill levels you're fishing with too. So, I mean, bobber fishing to me is a little bit more of a skill game than trolling. It's subtle, you know, setting the hook at the right time. And trolling, oftentimes, the fish is going to set themselves, you know?
Yeah, well, and there really is the truth, but it's, you know, it's just, you know, when you're bobber fishing, except for certain days, there are certain days that the bobber guys will just outperform me like crazy. But I just, I don't like watching paint dry.
Yeah.
And when you're waiting for that bite to happen, it's just monotonous to me. And it's, even though I'm 65 years old, I still got that ADHD thing going on. And it's just not me. Now, out of my drift boat, you know, on the Sillettes, you know, and floating down and seeing scenery change all the time, you know, I can do that, you know, all day long. And I like that. But, and, or in the Al Sea or wherever. But, yeah, down in Tidewater, it's just not my thing.
So what are your main rivers you want to fish normally in the fall?
So from August through the end of September or until we get a rain that pushes all the fish up, I'm on the Al Sea.
Okay.
Down in Tidewater.
Mm-hmm. What do you think your most booked item is on your website? What are people coming to you for?
Fall salmon.
Fall salmon, the big one?
Yeah. And I used to have a really big kokanee fishing clientele until they destroyed Green Peter this last year.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that, if you've had to shift and start fishing Detroit or somewhere else. Or
well, so you have to have a Forest Service permit to guide on Detroit Reservoir.
Oh.
And all those permits are taken.
Okay.
And so...
So you could fish it, but not as a guide.
Correct. So I have two real good friends that guide up there, and Kevin and Curtis, and all my kokanee people, I've just referred to them.
Do you think that Green Peter fishery will come back?
Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, ODF and DBW has always thought of kokanee and Green Peter as an invasive species. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is just kind of like a plus for them.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, they restored that, I'm air quoting, to a natural state. So they brought down the Green Peter Reservoir to a trickle, basically, and a lot of those fish died. And the smallmouth bass and all the things that were,
Everything. You know, there was, they put catch nets at the base of the dam at certain points, and I don't know how many days they did it for, but they were averaging 15 to 30,000 dead fish a day.
Wow.
Gosh, dang.
Coming out of that place.
That's crazy. I did not hear that. That's just big
the one,
numbers.
That's just the one they caught.
Well, that fish, I mean, that reservoir held a lot of fish. I mean, when we'd be up there smallmouth fishing, you'd have kokanee chasing your smallmouth lures. I mean, there was a lot of fish in there.
Well, you know, the limit on kokanee was 25 per person. Actually, 30 if you could put your trout limit in there too. And I could go up there with four people, let's say. And I could have everybody's limit. Starting at 7, I could have everybody's limit before noon.
Wow.
So, that's a lot of fish.
That's a lot of fish.
Well, these guys had to deal with it on the water side, didn't you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, at the city. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because when they ran that down, the water turned to a nice silty brown.
Chocolate milk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, they could probably do a whole new podcast on just that event alone. But, you know, that... The South Sea and the Am was mud for 7 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about all the egg beds that were covered.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that no light could get through, the aquatic life couldn't grow, which probably killed all the bug life, which made it so all the other native fish species in there couldn't feed. I mean, it's absolutely devastating.
Yeah. And I'm in the mindset of when man has messed with something for 50 years, you can't all of a sudden say, we want to undo it, you know, because there's all those subspecies that have already adapted to that new setup.
Yeah. So. And well, you need to think about the water table.
Yeah.
You know, the water table is also 300 feet higher.
Yeah.
And, you know, so all these people who built homes, that all of a sudden their wells are just dry.
Oh, yeah.
As a result of it. But from the wildlife aspect of it, It's just, it's horrible. And, you know, restoring it, it's naturally wild runs. Well, you know, 4 years after that dam was built, that run went extinct. Mm. So where did they get those natural wild fish up there from?
Yeah.
To stock. I mean, it's the hypocrisy of the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not the same fish anymore. It's, no. They're either from the McKenzie or who knows where they're from.
And so. The kokanee thing was fun. I mean, you could go up mm-hmm. there, even as a guy that doesn't really know what you're doing, and still catch some fish. You know, like I did it a few times and caught a few fish, but probably, I'm sure you had it dialed in.
Yeah, 100 fish in less than 5 hours, yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Do you ever fish other reservoirs for the kokanee? I know, like, my boss was big on Wickiup, and then I've heard Odell is a good one, too. But
Those are all good, and I fished those places. But once I really kind of dialed in with Green Peter, it was there wasn't a need for me to go.
It's closer to home. And
yeah, well, you know, and it's a business, and business yeah. is about, you know, minimum output for maximum return, and
yeah,
you know, that's kind of what that was sure. for me. But and plus, you know, I would go up there fishing with myself or friends, and you know, catch limits of fish, and or when I was with clients, I'd take my limit of fish and keep them for lingcod bait.
Oh, okay, well, that's so, cool.
Yeah.
Did you have to get the Forest Service permit to fish Green Peter for
it's
guided?
No, it's not National Forest land.
Oh yeah,
duh. Green Peter's not. So just Detroit.
So for Detroit, is it just like you? As soon as you get that permit, that's yours until you don't want it anymore. Is that something you have to renew?
You have to renew it every year.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you'd have to wait for somebody to not want it, and then you could get on the list or whatever.
Yeah, but there's people on the waiting list for that.
Already,
yeah, and it's just not that important to me, you know. So,
what's your favorite fish to fish for?
My to fish for is fall king salmon.
Okay,
that's my favorite. My favorite fish to eat is spring salmon, and then next to that, it's lingcod.
Okay, and is there a favorite fish to guide for too? Is there a difference there? Or do you ever get to fish for fun, or are you always fishing with clients?
No, I fish for fun. But you know, I really like winter steelhead too, but for the sake of just plain always catching fish, you know, that ocean bottom fishing is just a blast because they're, everything out there is hungry all the time.
Yeah. You're always going to be putting fish in the boat.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some days might be a little slower than others, but eventually, I mean, I'll bet you in the 11 years that I've been guiding, I've probably only not caught a limit of lingcod, maybe 5 days, 6 days. Mm. So
Dylan loves going out in the ocean. It's his favorite.
It's bad on me. It's real bad on me.
You mean the motion sickness?
Yeah. Oh, it's tough.
So I just found some new stuff. It's kind of like an essential oil,
mm-hmm.
and it's called Motion Ease.
Okay.
And everybody who's tried it in my boat has got relief from it.
That's good. I like that.
Everybody.
We should test it out.
Yeah, I'll test it out.
Yeah. So, and it's you just take a drop, put it on your fingers, rub it behind your ear where you would put the patch.
Mm-hmm.
And just rub it on. And it says you will feel relief within 4 to 5 minutes of putting it on. And that is the honest to God truth. I had people throwing up. And they put it on. And it, literally 4 to 5 minutes.
That'd be huge. They
had relief. And only one person out of the six now that have tried it ever had to reapply it that day.
Dang. I had some rough goes in Alaska. Those long days up there with those Dramamine packs or patches on?
Scopolamine, probably, if it was a patch.
What is it called?
Scopolamine? If it was a patch, it was probably scopolamine.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. Or maybe the Dramamine was just the pill.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? And then, so I took the pill in the morning, and then before we got on the boat, put a patch on.
Yeah.
And it was the worst 8 hours of my life each day out there.
Well, I used to get motion sick, and it was that patch that kind of helped me spend enough time on the ocean
mm-hmm.
to where I could just get acclimated to it to where I don't have to use it anymore.
Yeah, the I may have told this story on the show before, but I was going out ocean salmon fishing with my brother one time, and this family was eating hot dogs before we were about to leave, and I was just shaking my head like, this is not going to be a good move, you know. And it was a pretty, not a rough day, but not a smooth day, you know. It was a little choppy out there, and we got out. They were chumming like the entire time, and they were begging the captain. He's like, well, you can call the Coast Guard, but there's other people that have paid to be here, you know, to turn her out. Yeah. So it was a rough day for them.
Yeah.
And I got to catch everybody's fish. It was great. My brother caught his two fish, and then he started yakking. So I was the only non-puker on the boat. I was just catching fish all day. That was back when you had to reel through, like, you know, 80 silvers to get to your Chinook, and you couldn't keep the silvers. So.
Oh, yeah.
Do you do the ocean salmon fishing too?
Yep. Yeah. That starts July 4th weekend for me.
Okay.
That's kind of when I start, just because they're real small prior to that.
Okay.
But, and for your listeners, probably last year, everybody realizes there were just tons of wild fish out there. A lot of times you had a hard time getting a limit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would go through 40, 60 fish a day, and I still wouldn't have a limit for everybody. Well, those were all fish that were released during COVID.
Oh.
And so they couldn't get groups of people together in groups to fin club them.
Oh.
So a lot of those wild fish you were releasing were really hatchery fish.
Oh.
They just weren't clipped.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So this year is going to be totally different. There's good, really big numbers of coho again, but
are they letting people keep Chinook too, or is it?
Yeah, the Chinook's open right now.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, I've got three now, just out bottom fishing.
Okay.
So and a halibut.
Oh, nice.
So yeah,
that's, to me, I haven't gone out on the ocean in quite a while, but I love, like, that ocean Chinook thing. For me, is just kind of like the best.
You know, there's nothing better than just a Chinook herring bite.
Mm.
You know, and if you can, or you know, you're putting it down or something like that, and all of a sudden you feel one grab a hold of it, you get that start of that yank and yank, 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 and then all of a sudden they just turn and run with it. That is the best feeling, man. It's just so fun.
Yeah.
So fun.
So were you fishing and hunting everything your whole life, or was it something that gradually came about? Or?
Yeah, my dad was a real outdoorsman. We grew up on the east side of Corvallis. There's that pond right there alongside the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my house that I grew up in, the bypass that's there went right through where the garage was.
Oh, wow.
And so we were always over at those ponds and that slough, you know, fishing for crappie and bluegill and bass and stuff. And I didn't get into the salmon steelhead thing until I was probably 28, 30 years old, something like that. But, and it was kind of like my therapy.
Yeah.
You know, going out and doing that with friends. But
so, yeah, and you were in law enforcement for how long?
All totaled, because I worked for different places, 30 years.
Oh, wow.
But in Oregon, it was 27. The lower 27.
That's a long career, yeah.
It was.
There's something about, it seems like a lot of people that are in law enforcement are also into outdoor stuff. I don't know if that's a natural thing or like you're getting at the outlet or a place to clear your head a little bit, or it just seems like a lot of law enforcement employees are also outdoorsmen and they're fishers and hunters. And
I think some of that goes along with the, a lot of them are ex-military and stuff. And so, and a lot of them are hunters and kind of police work. Some aspects of police work is kind of like hunting.
Yeah. And you're obviously, you know how to handle a firearm when you're, you know, using it for work and you know,
there's probably people aren't as good at that as you think they are probably. So,
hey, my brother was a cop for a while and I know qualifying was always fun for him. So,
yeah. So Yeah, it's not like on TV.
Yeah.
So there's guys that are really good. I mean, I was a competitive shooter with handguns and stuff. And so, you know, I never had any trouble with that. But there are some people that need work.
So how did the fishing guide thing become, how did you transition to that? Did you already have a boat and you were already using it for yourself and taking people and just was like, hey, I might like this or?
Yeah. So I, took all my kids fishing and stuff like that. And so I got used to just kind of going around doing everything in the boat. And and stuff. And but then, you know, my other cop friends especially, and I had some other non-cop friends, when we would go like spring salmon fishing, fall salmon fishing, I was basically guiding, you know, because I was doing everything. I just wasn't getting paid for it. Mm-hmm. And so, and do you guys know the Grant Sheely?
Oh, yeah.
So Grant Sheely was, he approached me this one day, and I was still being a cop, and he says, you should really take up guiding. He says, you got a great disposition for it. He says, you communicate well with your people in your boat. He says, you're just not getting paid for it. And at the time, I was a detective, and the kind of the equivalent of what would be a major crimes thing. And so I told him, I said, Grant, I said, there's no way. I said, I'm getting called out all the time, you know, midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'll work straight through until 4 o'clock that afternoon. I said, can't make plans with somebody to take them fishing. And all of a sudden call them up and say, hey, I got called out on a homicide, a rape or whatever. And I'm going to have to break our plans. And he goes, oh yeah, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
And so, but the funny thing is now Grant's in the academy for the Oregon State Police.
Yeah, so. Yeah, he told me that the last time I bumped into him.
Yeah, so anyway, after I retired, then he broached it again. And I thought, yeah, what the heck, I'll give it a try. And actually really enjoyed it. And it's kind of nice having a job where people are actually happy to see you for a change.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, they're excited. They're paying you to see you.
I know it. So...
What's a, give us a crazy fish story of like just something, either a really big fish or something crazy that happened on the boat, if one comes to mind.
So, well, probably one of the craziest ones as far as like just everything happening at once was, are you guys familiar with the Alsea Jaws?
Mm-hmm. Not very, but I know what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, out there you're trolling herring, you know, close to the bottom. Most people don't use flashers. And we actually had 4 fish on at one time out of 5 rods. And you can just imagine, it was just a zoo.
God, pure chaos.
Two of the fish wanted to run like straight into town. One of them wanted to go clear back out to the ocean. And it was just a zoo. We only ended up getting 2 of those. But at the same time, one of them, we're fighting this one fish. We've already netted one, brought it in the boat. And we're trying to get another one. And two of my friends are fighting another one on the other side. And all of a sudden, I hear this big thump on the bottom of the boat. And these guys are just laughing. I look back and I see this fish flopping around. Well, it turns out it got up by the boat, ran back down, and then jumped and just landed. This is like 20-pound cane, you know, just flopping around on the bottom of the boat.
Jeez.
Really struck them funny. Me too afterwards.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, so that was one of the really good crazy things. But then one of the ones that wasn't as good was I was out bottom fishing out of Depot Bay, which is where I like to do that out of. And one of the clients got hung up on the bottom, and I was trying to get it free, and the rod broke. And it came back and hit me in the face and knocked my glasses off into the ocean.
Mm. Oh, no.
And so here I am, you know, not able to see really well, trying to navigate my way through that little channel.
Oh, geez.
I can see well enough to do it, but it was still.
A little scary.
Yeah, and they're brand new glasses. I just got them like a week before.
Yeah.
So.
My kid just sat on mine, so I got to go get an eye exam to get another pair. But
oh, that's what I thought. That was just the design on the lens.
No, I tried to super glue it. I need to solder it or something. But yeah,
you get some white masking tape.
Yeah, it's a good look.
It is. Yeah. It is. It works on people make millions of dollars off that on TV. All the time.
That's true.
Yeah,
John, you got any questions for Damon?
Let's see. So you, what is? I'm trying to think how to word it.
I got one.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm trying to think.
We'll come back.
Yeah, come back.
So can we talk a little bit about pricing?
Pricing?
Yeah, about how much it costs to come out with you and stuff like that. Just is it depending on species, I'd imagine, or what you're planning on doing?
Yeah. So the kokanee thing's done pretty much. I'll probably never run another one again. But Foster Reservoir has trout and kokanee in it, mm-hmm. and the limit there is 5 in aggregate. And I charge $150 for those trips. For my bottom fishing trips, I charge $200, and for salmon steelhead trips, it's $250 a person.
God, that seems pretty reasonable.
That's kind of like the going rate. But a lot of guides don't adjust their pricing.
Oh.
You know, but I just, I mean, I have an income with my retirement.
Yeah.
So I just do it to pay my expenses and maybe make a little bit more. But when it comes to the salmon steelhead thing, I really got to be up there kind of with those other guys so I'm not underselling them.
Yeah, you know? Right, that makes sure. sense. Yeah, keep it just fair for everybody.
Yeah.
You do sturgeon too, but I know that fishery kind of ebbs and flows. There's like the keeper slot that they're always moving, and then you can go do the oversized thing.
So the sturgeon fishing that I do, I only do catch and release. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, I mean, there are some people who just like that. I mean, they want to just go and catch as many as they can, you know, and just, you know, feel those 5-6 footers. When I do spring salmon trips, I'll normally go and do sturgeon after the fact, later in the day, because it always dies right around 11 o'clock. And as long as the tide's right, you know, I'll go and fish for sturgeon just so people can, you know, be productive throughout the day and have some fun rather than just trolling around aimlessly.
Yeah.
So.
Do you like you said, you prefer like Depot Bay? Like, do you jump around spots? Like, do you go like Newport, like stuff like that? Or you just kind of stay in one certain spot?
So I can fish out of Newport, but pretty early on Newport, because it has such a big commercial and charter boat fleet, that the bass get whittled down to just little dinks real fast. And that doesn't happen at Depot Bay.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's just a lot more fish off Depot Bay. There's a lot more reef structure, and it just supports life better.
Bigger fish, too.
Oh, yeah. Like. I mean, we had bass the other day that we got that were probably 7-8 pounds.
Yeah,
oh,
wow. That's great. I mean,
for sea bass, that's huge.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And they have charters out of there, too, the bigger commercial charters, but not as many, probably, as Newport. Correct.
Yeah, it's such a small port. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they only have, you know, of the big charter boats, you know, like the 20 person charter boats, I think there's like 6 where I don't even know how many Newport has. But, and, you know, at a depot, they run their fishing trips in the morning and then they do whale watching in the afternoon. But Newport, it's fishing trips in the morning, fishing trips in the afternoon and stuff. And so. And they're all really, really good at what they do, you know, especially the bass thing. And like I said, they find schools and they just whittle them down to the little guys real fast.
Yeah.
So.
That makes sense. What boat do you fish out of? What style of boat?
I have a Koffler. Mm-hmm. That boat's a 24-foot Koffler, and it's called a Baby, B-A-Y-B-E-E. I don't know why they name it that, but they do. That's the boat I use, I use them just because their customer service is just phenomenal. They have their business model, I guess, is that their boats being on the water is their best form of advertising. Mm-hmm. And if the boat's not on the water, it's not advertising. And so, and not just for the guides, but for anybody. If you come in with a problem, I mean, they will take a guy off of a boat build and put him on it to get it done so you're back out there as fast as possible. And I mean, your wait time is minimal. It's not like you're number 20 on the list. Leave your boat.
Yeah.
And we'll get to it when we can. I mean, they jump right on it.
Well, on a jet sled like that, you can run in, what, 4 inches of water or 8 inches of water or something?
Four inches if it's a jet boat is the – unless you have a tunnel. If you have a tunnel, then it can actually be a little bit less.
Yeah.
It's probably not recommended.
I got a buddy. Crazy. He's had 2 Kofflers. So he fished with just kind of an older version, and then he really went to a fancy one with a joystick and all that, and he runs whitewater and stuff on that thing. So
I've never got into the joystick thing.
Oh man, it's
so
it's weird. But just I've never driven it. I've just watched him. I mean, he's just moving that joystick all over the place.
Yeah. It's really interesting, you know, throttle and then steering. yeah, it's interesting, but it just seems too spooky to me if you lose your balance or something like
that. Yeah, if you trip for a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. That is kind of freaky. I didn't think about that, but
yeah,
I will if I go with him again. Yeah.
Make sure you have your seatbelt on.
Yeah.
For your own personal time, not guiding, would you prefer to be out fishing, or would we prefer to do some hunting, or what are you wanting to do?
Depends on what time of year you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. But just what you look forward to the most for your own personal time.
So I really like everything outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times that I just want to go hiking or snowshoeing or something. My wife is a real outdoorsy, hikey person, too. She likes to hike even more than me. But she also really likes to catch Chinook salmon. So she doesn't hunt anymore. The rut season,
mm-hmm.
I'm out literally every day,
yeah.
You know, rattling and stuff like that. So, I mean, that I love that kind of stuff. In the fall, if I'm not salmon fishing, I'm in the woods.
Yeah.
I don't turkey hunt or anything like that, but, I guess
just depends.
I do like to fish on my days off, but it's more to spend time with my friends.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually still more like guiding.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm still baiting the hooks and doing all this stuff, cast over here, cast over there.
Yeah.
You know, but it's but I'm spending time with those guys that I used to fish with all the time that now is just a once in a while kind of thing. Right.
So do you archery hunt or rifle?
I actually do both.
Okay.
So the land I hunt is, it's 750 acres of private land over by Ankeny Hill Refuge.
Okay.
In that nice. Savannah hillside there.
Yeah. I live over there.
Oh. So. And I'm the only person who hunts it. And so I get an LOP from the landowner every year, and then I get a general season tag too.
That's awesome.
So I get the general season archery just so I can have more time.
Yeah.
In the woods. And then the LOP. And so, but the big bucks up there, almost all of those I've taken with a rifle, mm-hmm. just because, you know, you can shoot so much further.
Yeah.
But I have got, I get a couple of bucks every year up there.
That's cool.
So
you're thinning my herd that comes into my backyard, it sounds like.
Well, it depends on where you're at.
Yeah. So. I'm just down the road from the refuge. So if you...
So this is, you know where Conkomalee Road is?
I should. I've probably driven by it, but like I don't know it off the top of my head.
You know all the ritzy houses at Chinook Estates?
I'm sorry. I'm shaking my head. No, I don't.
Then I'm not thinning your herd.
Well, know where the new interpretive center is that they put in? So I'm pretty close to that.
Okay. So this is going to be on the far west end of the ridge there.
Okay.
So...
You see the elk herd when you're out there too sometimes?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. We got a real nice picture of a bull branching out the other
day. Like almost all bulls in that herd. It's just crazy. We just don't ever have cows. I don't know. Eventually that's going to be a problem.
All the cows right now are over on the east side of the freeway on the same guy's land. He has an alfalfa field and a pond, and they're calving, and they just stay there. For months.
Oh.
Just because there's no
pressure
to go anywhere else.
Yeah.
I knew we said we weren't going to dive back into hunting.
Of course you got us into it.
But I brought us right back.
He's not a huge fisherman. I mean, he's trying to be more open-minded to it.
Yeah. Well, just that those couple days in Alaska really threw it off for me.
Yeah. Have you done the Alaska thing?
I've gone up to the Kenai. And I've fished for reds up there. I have a friend that does the Chinook fishery up there. And I've jumped in his boat a couple of times just to be an extra rod for him.
Okay.
And of the 2 days that I spent up there the last time, we didn't even get a bite. So, I mean, that's not for me.
Shut it down now too, pretty much, the King fishery.
Well, I mean, they overfish the heck out of it up there. I mean, it's just so silly. But yeah, I don't want to get off on a negative aspect of it. But But the Reds thing, I mean, fishing the sockeyes is fun.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Kind of that flip and dragon thing.
90,000 fish a day. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun when it happens, and, you know, having them hit so close, and they fight really well at first. And,
yeah, the bucks.
And they're especially delicious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So sockeye are delicious.
I know. You can't beat them.
No, they're awesome. But
yeah. I'm about ready to do the shad fishing thing here. Pretty soon.
You're getting close.
Yeah. I watch the counts, and once it gets to about 60,000 a day, then I go.
Yeah.
Sometime in the next couple weeks.
So what do you do with them?
Crab bait.
Okay.
So we just go up to Bonneville, and we load up on them and then freeze them. So yeah. It's fun. I think pound for pound, actually, shad fight pretty good.
No, they're an awesome fighting little fish. I've caught them a few times, but I don't want to ruin my freezer space with...
That's the issue. Yeah, I told my brother he has to store them this year. So.
If I was a halibut fisherman, I'd catch more of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because just cutting them into strips, I mean, they're great because they're a relative of herring, and but they're oilier.
Oh, so yeah.
Throw out tons of scent.
Yeah, they're great crab bait or oversized sturgeon too. Mm-hmm. You can put a whole one on there and wrap it up and throw it out there.
Yep.
But we hook into some sturgeon when we're shad fishing. There's always one that's like keying in on the shad fisherman and sucks it in. That shad dart hook does not hold very long against the sturgeon, though.
Imagine. Have you caught any Chinook doing that?
Uh-uh.
It's right below the Willamette Falls. There's a lot of Chinook get cut every year on those little shad darts.
It's yeah, and we're weird. Fishing like right below the dam, right below Bonneville.
Bonneville, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't done the Willamette
Falls.
That's
a lot thing. Bigger water.
Yeah, so. It's big water for sure. It's fun though.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever tell you the crab story about losing your fingernail?
Did I talk? I don't know if I talked about it or not, but I went crabbing like.
Sorry, another tangent. But.
Yeah, but I want to say it was 2 months ago, something like that. And I wanted to go with my brother's kids, so we had a bunch of kids out on the, and we didn't go in a boat because they're pretty squirrely. But it was kind of like their first exposure to crabbing, and we've all been crabbing since we were kids. So, and I haven't gotten pinched by a crab in a long time. But we're there with the kids, and we're just having a good time, and I'm not really paying attention. So that's like a two-month grow out. It's almost past. But this just rock crab just got a hold of me, and I was just holding him, talking to my niece, I think, and he pinched on. And then I don't know why I didn't tear his pincher off, but I was like, didn't want to hurt the crab. So I like went to go pry him off of me, and then he got another even deeper. And I'm bleeding all over my sweatshirt. And, you know, and then I finally throw him in the water, and I said, now, kids, that's why you don't put your finger in the crab's pinchers. And my brothers were like, yeah, you were definitely trying to teach the kids a lesson there. But yeah, my finger was numb for quite a while. The nerve endings took a pretty good pinch. But yeah, he got me good, went all the way through the nail. So
those red rocks are the worst, man. They are super strong.
Yeah, I was not happy about it.
It was so funny when you tell me that story.
Yeah, it was not a good way to end it. But
yeah.
Well,
you know, it's when I take people out crabbing, you know, who've never done it before or something. I like those Danielson traps for that, the square ones, and you, especially, you know, in July, August, when September, when there's just millions of them around, and it's not hard to catch them. You just dump that thing out on the floor, and you know, you get grown men, you know, crawling up on the seats and
I would probably be one of those guys.
But, spiders of the sea.
But you know, the people who don't know how to catch them don't realize that all you have to do is push on their back, and they can't move, they can't reach you, and then you can reach around and grab those back legs and stay pretty well protected.
Yeah, I think I just got a little too casual in the moment and wasn't paying attention, because you're just so used to dealing with them that you're just like, oh, it's not going to be a big deal. Then they can still get you. Do you ever drop pots when you're going out, like salmon fishing too?
Yeah, when I do my coho season, especially I do that out of Newport and Depot Bay, is I leave traps out all day, all night, and I just rebait them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, sometimes there'll be 40 crabs in one trap.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
loaded.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and those ones in the ocean too are huge. Like, if you get those ocean
big dinner
dungies,
plate ones, yeah,
they're giant.
Yeah.
So.
And I got new traps last year that they're actually a commercial sized trap in circumference and stuff, but they're made of thinner rebar. And instead of having the rubber wrapped around them and stuff, they're just dipped.
Oh, nice.
Rubberized dip. And so they're a lot lighter. they hold an amazing number of crabs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're going to hold up really well, too, and you're going to have to deal with little pieces of rubber falling off all the time.
Yep.
Do you ever do the tuna thing?
Nope. Haven't done that yet.
You've never done it personally?
Nope.
Yeah, never either.
So I really love the ocean, you know, but something about being 50, 60 miles out just doesn't interest me.
Yeah, you got to go ways.
Well, you know, and my boat's got a tiller handle on it. And, you know, just going out to the rock pile, that's a lot of work standing back there, you know, moving your left arm around and and stuff. So I don't really care to do that for 40, 50, 60 miles.
Yeah, I don't blame you a bit on that. Yeah. I haven't done it either. I've always wanted to, but that's what always keeps me from doing it too. It's like there's guys that do the overnight too.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to do that.
No, it's not worth it to me.
Yeah.
So, but
especially when you catch a salmon, it tastes a whole lot better.
Oh, I love tuna. I love tuna loins.
But yeah, they're good.
It's not worth that much to me.
Right.
You know, so
you can buy a tuna loin pretty cheap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man!
But
do you have sorry, I'm going right back to hunting because that's what I know.
Yeah,
you're talking about you got a picture of a bull. Here, do you have cell cameras, or you have to go check them? Have you tried cell cameras?
No, I have cell cameras. I actually have cell cameras up by the front gate, and because people have a tendency to come on his property and dump stuff.
Oh, that's so annoying.
And so, I get alerts of that, but then. I actually have six cameras up at the front gate, all from different areas. Some of those watch the other cameras because I've actually had people come and steal the cameras.
Yeah.
And so in this way here, I report it to the sheriff's office and depending on the deputy I get, depends on whether it gets solved or not. But, I went and, checked my cameras before I came here. And somebody went and dumped some stuff, so I got to go and pull those cards and go talk to a deputy again. So
note to all listeners, do not mess around with former law enforcement's trail cams.
Yeah.
It's not a smart idea.
It's not a smart move.
Yeah. He's going to find you.
Yeah.
So our trail cameras have no action since the last time we talked, except just grass growing. We had one flower kind of grow up right in front of the camera. And so we had to basically turn that camera off because the wind, we jumped from like 88 photos one day to like 300 the next day.
And can you turn it off remotely from your phone?
No, you can just, like on mine, like I just turned the detection delay, like to the highest it could go was like an hour or something like that. So it was getting less photos, but it was still getting quite a bit.
Well, then we got a picture of a deer, and it's just the left ear.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, it's not going to hang out for an hour for that next photo.
Right.
So, we're struggling.
Yeah.
So, this is that bull I was telling you about that I saw.
Oh, yeah. Starting to come get his antlers.
Oh, nice.
He's walking right on the road up there. Yeah.
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I see the herd out there every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right where the dog place is, we'll see it. They'll go into that guy's pond and get a drink. So I've seen them all just drinking in there.
Before. Yeah. I call this place Jerry's Place. And so, I don't see him up there very often. Just occasionally it's a bull or a cow that wanders through for whatever reason. So I was going to.
Have you picked up any cougar or anything like that out there?
No. Yeah. There was a bear 1 year, about 10 years ago, there was a bear that was in there, but I've never caught any cougars.
We've gotten a few on trail cams in the neighborhood, but I've seen a really big bobcat. But
bobcats I see frequently.
Haven't seen any cougars.
So,
have you had any wild and crazy stuff on your boat? Bringing us back to fishing, with like, people that get carried away with how they're casting or things like that, like fishing hooks and ears and things like that.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff because you know the guides notoriously take and have a. A lot of us have inexperienced people.
Yeah.
You know, and they get caught up in the motion. They get tunnel vision. You know, their ears shut off and they don't hear your instructions. So you have to, like, get a hold of them to kind of break that concentration, you know. So there was one of my first guide trips was with two guys from Oregon State University. They're scientists. But one of them was an analyst of all that data, of all this data that this scientist guy gives. So you can imagine he's really anal, this guy. I mean, he's a very process-driven person. And he never really fished before. And so with this winter steelhead fishing, I was I explained to him how to cast. You know, you hold the rod like this, you know, with the post between your fingers, you know, and then you turn the reel this way to where the line's the closest, grab it with your finger. And so literally every time before, when I'd say, get ready to cast, he would have a hold of the butt of the rod like this, and then he would move his hands up between where the post would, reel post would go between him, and then he would turn the reel, and then he would grab it with his finger, then he would open the bail, and then he would look, put his hand back, and then he would come back. It would take him like 45 seconds.
You're already past the hole by the time.
Yeah, because you know, us guys, we're always telling everybody, get ready ahead, because we know the fish are down there.
Yeah.
We want everything in the water before we get there. But by the time he cast, we're already at it or beyond it or whatever. So, yeah, it was – he was one of the most frustrating ones because he never got better throughout the day.
Yeah.
Almost everybody takes and improves and speeds up. Because
he followed the process
It was a process. I mean, he memorized the process really well. Mm-hmm. It just never sped up.
The fluidity never came.
Yep. So, I mean, it's things like that. And then especially with salmon fishing, I mean, this happened yesterday, is I was fishing on the North Santa Am. And we landed one fish, and this is a family. And the dad fishes with me a fair amount, but his boys just occasionally, but they've never fished with spinning reels with me before. The dad hooks a fish, and the other boys are so enamored with the fact that dad's hooked one and stuff, and he's fighting. I'm going, boys, reel up, get him up. And stuff, and then so finally the one starts reeling it in and stuff. Well, he brings it across his dad's line. And so all of a sudden, oh, I got one. I go, don't jerk. And so he jerks and pulls the hook out of that fish's mouth. And so that's kind of like one of the things that is the most frustrating, you know, for us, because, you know, I always have that conversation at the beginning of every day. You know, when I tell you there's a fish on, everybody needs to just scream those reels in. You're going to want to be distracted, but don't. Just get them in so you're out of the way.
Yeah.
And that happened twice yesterday.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. But,
I think the second time I would have had that pocket knife.
Yeah.
You know, that line would have been gone.
You had to build up a lot of patience doing this over the years.
You just got to understand, you know, and there's been some times where emergency things kind of like happen, you know, and where you just really need people to pay attention. And it's important to stay cool, but to get your point across. And I think all of us guides are pretty good at that. But I think my law enforcement experience, just there's things that are a catastrophe to some people. They're just really no big deal to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, for
and sure. So, and I've had lots of people tell me that, yeah, I'm really amazed at how cool you stayed during that. Like, well, you know.
I've seen some things. I've been through
a lot worse.
Yeah.
So trust me. But, you know, like near crashes and stuff like that, you know, so.
Fishing lines and props and that type of stuff too.
So that's nothing really. Yeah. But, I mean, it's So there's stories about that too, but.
I hate to bring this back up from the first 10 minutes of the episode, but were you a city cop, county cop, or?
So I started my career as a deputy sheriff here in Linn County. Nice. And then my wife and I were married, and we had one child. And then our next pregnancy was two kids. Oh. And the city of Albany paid a lot more than the sheriff's office did. So I applied with the city of Albany and got hired by them for the greater paycheck.
Yeah.
And retired from there.
Nice. Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Sorry to bring that up. It's just been on my mind since.
You've been curious the whole time.
10 minutes in.
Oh, that's all good. So did you work under Mario then Was he here when
I retired before Mario got him. So
he was good. I haven't met the new chief we have now, but I think she's good too. And I don't, who was before Mario? Who was your chief?
Ed Boyd.
Okay.
Was his name.
I know that name, but I don't think I ever met him.
So I hear a lot of good things about the chief now. So yeah.
I think I've heard good things too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Albany does a good job, I think, you know, I mean, that nice new station they got.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, those kinds of things are nice, you know, for anybody, you know, to have something nice and new and stuff like that. But it's more important than anything else, just the community support. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Albany's really a blue collar place.
Yeah.
For the most part, you just got a lot of working people. But, you know, you got I-5 here.
Yeah.
And there's tons of transitory crime that happens just by people who are known for criminal activity in Salem and Eugene and Springfield and stuff. You know, they'll come to Albany to commit their crimes. Mm. So hopefully they can leave without getting caught and nobody will ever know.
Yeah.
So that's the only bad thing about living on the interstate.
Yeah.
Is that. And there's tons of bad people come through Albany. It's amazing the number of like major crimes and what just happened here recently. You know, the guy who murdered his wife and stuff. I mean, he was spotted in Albany, and that's where the pursuit started at.
They got him in Eugene,
Yeah, it ended with him killing himself down in Eugene. Mm. So, and there's been lots of big cases like that that have happened because they came to Albany.
Yeah, initially. As a detective, too, that would have to be frustrating because it's like, it would be hard to track stuff down, I imagine.
So everybody in detectives in Albany have an expertise that they're trained in. And my thing was forensic evidence collection, but it was also, I was assigned to child abuse and sex abuse and mm-hmm. stuff. And so from that aspect of it, the offender's almost always known. Mm-hmm. So it was just working those things through to fruition. And that's not something we need to get into here, you know. But
well, that's a somber topic for sure. But then the fact that that definitely comes back to your story of I don't sweat the small stuff in the fishing boat compared to that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. But you know, there's all the stuff that people don't have any idea about that the cops do. Mm. Yeah. You know, if you hear about, here we're going to go off on a tangent. But,
no, that's fine. It's all right. That's what we like to do.
You hear about all the things that, all the bad things that cops do. Mm-hmm. And stuff, but a lot of things people don't realize is, you know, especially when it comes to like shootings and stuff. I mean, just how many close calls with shootings there are that just don't happen. You know, it's just like me. I have 7 instances to where I would have been legally justified to shoot somebody, but that person, the offender, I drew a line in the sand, so to speak, that if he or she does this, I'm going to do it. But it just never came to that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's just me. That's, you know, 7 times that I could have done something, mm-hmm. but chose not to because that person, you know, complied finally.
Yeah.
And so it's, and everybody's different with that, but nobody else knows about that, you know, except for my friends and stuff like that.
Nobody talks about the good side of all the times you could have done something that you didn't.
You know, and even in those situations, as we're talking about it, I mean, I'm running through them in my head, mm-hmm. you know, and that's just baggage that carries with you. And then, you know, and the aspects of law enforcement that, especially in the area that I did, the child abuse, you know, every SID's death I went to, you know, every accidental death of a kid or something like that, I went to. Mm. And that stuff just, it wears on you.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And for just no particular reason, sometimes, you know, I have things that pop up. Mm. And so, you know, so I think any policeman, any fireman, you can't leave that profession without some kind of PTSD a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, whether you get, I don't have therapy for it or whatever, but because I don't think I need it, but it's the fact that it's there and things just randomly just pop into your head.
Yeah.
Once in a while, you know, visions of what you saw. And
Yeah.
It's just, you don't get rid of it. So,
yeah. But, well, thanks for sharing. That's intense stuff. I mean, that the room got real quiet when you started talking about that stuff. But I mean, we really appreciate your years of service. I mean, I'm very grateful for anyone that sacrifices in that way to serve the community. So thank you.
I didn't mean to. Yeah, I'm sorry. I brought that.
No worries at all. No, that's great.
I mean, that's what this is all about. We just talk about all kinds of things, and we never know where we're going to go. So it's all good.
I just don't want to be too gross about it. I'm leaving all the gross stuff out.
It was awesome. Yeah. Thank you for your service. Seriously.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. I mean, it's what I chose to do. I wanted to do it ever since I was young. You know,
but
I found out real quick that it wasn't like Starsky and Hutch on TV,
right?
Because those guys didn't write any reports at all.
So
the paperwork side was a little more heavy than you thought it would be.
Yeah, a lot more.
Yeah, That was when my brother was a police officer in Corvallis. That's what he said. He was shocked how much paperwork.
Yeah.
So he's a firefighter paramedic now, and that was what he wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
But until he could get the job he wanted, he had to take the job he could get, and that was Corvallis police officer for a year.
That's interesting.
And he was just shocked the paperwork.
Yeah. Yeah. He's documentation.
Yeah. He's like, I just hated pulling people over because the amount of paperwork I'd have to do. You know?
There's still guys that feel that way.
Yeah.
That's why there's some guys that go out there with blinders on. They just drive. Yeah. I didn't see it.
Everything's perfect. Nothing's.
Yeah. It's like Sergeant Schultz.
Yeah.
You know, I saw nothing.
Well, John, did you ever figure out your burning question you had?
That was my one, but I got another one. So,
okay, here we go.
Kind of tying in like the law enforcement stuff. Like while you're out guiding, do you have run-ins with like game wardens and stuff like that, or is it kind of like, I feel like guides, like you have to have like a lot of stuff like in check, like to be a guide, you know? So like, do they kind of like stay away from that, or you still get checked? Like,
well, around here it's Linn County, right?
So there's good guides and there's bad guides.
Right.
There's guides every year that get, maybe guys who've been guiding for 20 years, but for some reason they just decide they don't want to renew their license.
Okay.
But they keep guiding anyway.
So though there is that stuff that you need to do, some of them just be like,
And there's the guys who are the pirates that they take more fish than they should and stuff like that. And eventually they get caught. So OSP treats us all the same.
Okay.
And in some ways require more of us. And, with guiding, there's a fee for your to be a guide every year. You're required to carry at least $1 million insurance policy. And then you, especially if you're going to work the navigable rivers or the ocean, you have to have be certified by the Coast Guard. And you have to reapply and be confirmed with that every 5 years.
Okay.
And then everything that you're required to have with you for the safety of the public that lots of people aren't required to have, you know? And if you're going to be out over 20 miles offshore, you have to carry with you what's called an EPIRB, let's say. It's an electronic beacon, you know, that sends an emergency signal by satellite, and Coast Guard, you know, sends a helicopter when one goes off. Mm-hmm. So, it's just all those things like that you have to have. So we do have to have our stuff squared away.
Yeah.
But there are guys that try and cheat the system to save money and stuff. And here and I didn't even think about this, and I normally do think of this kind of stuff, is that we received some information from the State Marine Board, because they do this licensing of guides, that says, please do not put pictures of your stickers on Facebook anymore. Because people are taking those pictures and then sending them to these sticker manufacturers. And making them and then putting them on their boats. And then, because it looks like, you know, a real guide sticker.
Yeah.
And so, you know, everybody looks at it and thinks, oh, that guy's a guide. I've never seen him working here before.
Yeah.
Wonder who he is.
He must know what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, or you know, just other guides. Mm-hmm. I wonder who that guy is. Hey, you know, and so, but eventually those guys get caught.
Yeah.
And the penalties for it's huge. But, but there's nefarious people everywhere.
Yeah.
So
I feel like you definitely have some knowledge on that too.
I like throwing that word out there. Yeah.
That's a good word.
It is good.
Yeah. You can't probably do like the 10 and 2 or whatever you do to tell them you're ex-law enforcement when you're in a boat. It's a little more probably It's not quite the same.
You mean with the Coast
Guard?
Well,
like, no, if somebody pulled you over or something and tried to get you, it probably isn't, it probably doesn't matter as much. I think that's where you're getting at, right? Initially was like, hey, does your law enforcement,
like, I was just meaning like in general, like do guides, like, I don't know, like not really targeted, but like, do they
like held to a higher standard?
Yeah. Like that sort of thing.
They are held to a higher standard.
Yeah.
So, just because we're professionals and we're supposed to,
and you know, the rules
we're supposed to,
Yeah. True. That's what I was like, if you were to see like, that's a guide boat and that's just like a normal guy out there fishing, like, would it be like, let's check this guy. And,
yeah. You know, I always felt that, you know, as a policeman, it was always my job to set the example for everybody to follow. Mm-hmm. You know, but, you know, if but then I would hear people complain all the time about, you know, this cop, he just came up and he never stopped for that stop sign. He just rolled right through it like it was nothing.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, yeah, I see where you're getting at, but I'd have to explain to him that sometimes we respond tactically to things.
Yeah.
And tactically means you don't want somebody to know you're coming, so you don't turn your lights and siren on. You just come up and you look and you just go, because you still got to get there quick.
Yeah.
But there's that tactical approach. And some people understand that, some people don't. I don't think it's very, because Oregon, California, Idaho is, no, not Idaho, probably Idaho too, but Washington, I mean, they're really strong on disciplining, you know, bad cops. And so any kind of complaint that comes in, I mean, it's really looked at, and it's looked at hard. And so if you see some policeman that's speeding somewhere, doing something, and he doesn't have his lights on, he probably is going somewhere. It's the best thing to do is to not have it on, because this is something else, especially on the freeways. I mean, you might see a trooper just go by and he doesn't have any lights on, but he's hauling ass. Can I say that?
Yeah.
He's
hauling ass. But most people don't realize this, but you've probably experienced it, that you may hear a siren and then instantly the car goes by you. So, and it's because even though sound travels at a certain speed, sometimes when you're going that 120, 130 miles an hour, you're almost outrunning your siren. Mm. And so it's actually safer to the motoring public for you not to have your siren on, because the two things, the siren going off as the car comes by has actually caused real serious accidents. Mm-hmm. And so state police, deputy sheriffs especially, because they're out on those rural roads, you know, they're taught lots of times to, if traffic's not real super heavy, it's just safer for you to just go. Hmm. Leave those things off, because, you know, people can recover better from a car just flying by them versus hearing that siren and the car at the exact same time and spooking somebody and doing something that they wouldn't normally do.
Hmm. So, that's interesting.
And I'll definitely admit, I've been a guy to cuss out a stater as he's flying by me without lights on.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. But that's good knowledge, though.
Yeah.
So, because the state police especially, man, they are big on public relations, and they don't tolerate any bad behavior on their part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And stuff. And so if somebody's hauling ass somewhere, it's because
there's a reason.
There's a reason.
There's a reason for it, and he just doesn't want to announce it. Or it's for the safety of everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, it makes total sense when you put it out there like that. Yeah, it makes total sense as to why that's happening.
Yeah, you know, if it's traffic's heavy like it is right now or something like that, you know, the trooper's going to turn on his siren and he's going to go, but he's not going to be going 100 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he just wants it, but because the sound can travel farther, you know, and get people's attention to get them to, you know, pull over and yield to him.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's limited traffic on the road, sometimes it's better to just go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we could have a whole law enforcement podcast.
Yes.
You could teach us a lot of stuff. We could learn a lot from you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's why they do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, we really appreciate you coming in and spending some time with us and sharing some stories. And we're going to have to book an OAP fishing trip with you. So that's, we need to get on your calendar.
That'd be fun.
Get this guy that oil first and we'll get him.
Yeah.
We'll coat it on. I know you said a couple drops, but we'll just get like a handful and we'll spritz it back there. and see if he can
get a couple of eyedroppers full of it.
Just yeah, we'll just load him
an
up.
IV drip or something
yeah.
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
get one of those old beer hats.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, just put him on a feed system. Yeah, yeah that's exactly. perfect.
No, that'd be fun. It'd be fun to get people out and actually see what I do, because I bottom fish different than a lot of other guys do, but it's really good for lingcod especially. So,
and those are good eating fish.
Yep.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Well, we'll figure it out. We'll get one on the books.
All right.
So, thank you for coming on.
Appreciate it. It's fun chatting with you guys.
Yeah, it was fun.